The title this evening is Our Journey So Far. And as I was thinking about this journey, the journey that we've come along together for nearly 30 years, isn't it, Dirk? I was just thinking, where actually are we going? Where's the journey that we're all going to? And I was reading these verses in Revelation, just to remind myself where we're actually going, because we can get very bogged down on this journey that's a pilgrimage, really, this life. In chapter 21 of Revelation, it says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will be with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.'" And then over in chapter 22 and verse 5, "There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever." And that was a nice reminder to me. That's where we're going. We're going to a place where there will be no more suffering and pain, and there will be no sorrow, and there will be light all the time, no more darkness. And this evening, I'd like to just tell you a bit about our story as a backdrop to the weekend, because the things that we'll be sharing over the weekend have come out of our life, really, what we've been through in our life together. Well, Dirk and I both became Christians about 1961. Maybe some of you weren't even born then, but that's when we both became Christians. Dirk in Canada and me in Manchester. And for myself, in 1962, there was a Billy Graham crusade in Manchester. Some of you might remember that, some of the older ones. But at that Billy Graham crusade, Christians were invited to be counselors for the people who came forward. And so me, as a very young one-year-old Christian, went to be trained as a counselor. And through those counselor sessions, I met many people, made some good friends, and I came into contact with a group called the Navigators, because they had prepared all the material for the Billy Graham Crusade, Bible studies and scripture memory verses. And so we all did these courses together. And then after the crusade, a little group of us got together and decided we wanted to continue doing these Bible studies and learning verses together. And so that was my first involvement with this group called the Navigators. And then Dirk had become a Christian in Canada in 1961 as a result, well, after he'd had quite a serious accident and could have been killed, but in fact had his hand badly damaged. And while he was in hospital, the minister from his church visited him and asked him, you know, where would you have been if you'd died? Very blunt question. Don't know if you do it that way, David, but this is what his minister did. And Dirk knew that he would have been in hell because he hadn't trusted Christ. And so soon after that, he did trust Christ and became a Christian. And then his family moved back to Holland from Canada. And in Holland, he met the Navigators through Youth for Christ originally, and then Navigators. Youth for Christ groups used to go to Navigator conferences in Holland, and so he came in contact with the Navigators. So how did the two of us get together from two different countries? We both found ourselves in a place called Loughborough in the Midlands. I'd given up my job as a medical technician for a year to help in a home where they the couple who lived in this home were trying to reach out to students at the university and had a very busy home, had two children. And so I went as a sort of au pair to help in their home. And Dirk came over from Holland to help the man, Rob, as he went out onto the campus. His wife didn't go out so often onto the campus. She did all the work at home when they brought the people back. She was just as good at talking to people as her husband was. So we met in that home in Loughborough, and we were married. We met and fell in love, and we got married a couple of years later. And originally, we started our married life in Holland. Now, just before we got married, Dirk had had some tests because he went to give blood. And in Holland, they do very thorough blood tests and all kinds of tests when you give blood. And they discovered that he had albumin in his urine. And so they carried out a number of tests and discovered that he must have had some kidney problem without even knowing about it, probably. And so this came as quite a shock. You know, we had no idea he wasn't ill at the time, but it was just something that we were suddenly faced with, that there was something wrong with his kidney. And as time went by, Dirk became more and more ill. He started having migraines quite regularly, and this was all connected with blood pressure and the kidneys. And we lived in a place called Groningen in the north of Holland at that time, and God had blessed the work we were doing in bringing many people to Christ. We probably had about 80 people that were doing Bible study with us that had become Christians during that time. And Dirk was struggling with being ill every week. And he just wasn't getting very much help, and I was desperate. I was seeing him ill every week and finding it terribly difficult. And in the end, I phoned the people that we'd lived with in Loughborough. I phoned them up and just poured my heart out as to how worried I was about him. And very soon after that, we packed our bags, left Groningen. We had Mandy at the time. And we literally went with a couple of suitcases and Mandy back to England to see a private Christian doctor, because we just felt we weren't getting the help we needed in Holland. And he did lots of other tests, and he was able to give Dirk some treatment for the migraines and the blood pressure. And so for a while everything quietened down, and he was much better. And then we lived in Manchester in Chorlton for a couple of years. And then the navigators asked us if we'd go to Sheffield and work with students in Sheffield. And that was about 1972. Mark was born in 1972. And I think it was the year after 73 when we went to Sheffield. And again, God blessed the work that we were doing. And we did see many people come to Christ. And it was very exciting. But as time went by, Dirk's kidney was gradually getting worse. And in 1976, he was very ill. And he went to the hospital and came back with the news that he was going to need kidney dialysis. I just can't tell you what a shock this was to us, because although we knew he had a kidney problem, I think we'd never put two and two together and thought that one day it would actually fail and that he would need this kind of treatment. So we were just devastated. And then the month after this happened, our three-year-old son, Mark, suddenly started being very lethargic. He started wetting the bed after being dry at night. And he started getting very, very thirsty. And you've guessed already, he had diabetes. And I was 7 months pregnant with our third child. So the two of us, you know, took Mark to the hospital, and Dirk was dragging himself around because he was in Sheffield, their policy was, we wait until you're really on your last legs before you go on dialysis, because dialysis is so horrible that you've got to appreciate it. And to appreciate it, you need to be really ill. And so they literally left you until you were desperate. And Dirk wasn't desperate until June. So he had to drag himself around for those months. having a diabetic child was a terrific adjustment. Mark was a very lively boy. We had to chase him round to give him injections. We had to learn how to put needles in. We had to learn about his diet. And then in March, Stephen was born. And then in June, Dirk started on dialysis. And dialysis wasn't as refined then as it is now. The equipment was a bit rougher than it is now. They have all these nice disposable things now, but in those days it was much more primitive. And I had to go to the hospital to learn how to help Dirk. And so I had a new baby, a diabetic child, and I had to go to the hospital with Dirk to learn to use all this equipment. And the working that out was amazing. A German girl came to our home and helped us. I couldn't have managed without that help. Because it meant feeding the baby first thing in the morning. I was breastfeeding. Then going to the hospital, helping Dirk, coming back for the next feed, going back again in the afternoon, then coming back again for the next feed. I had to get used to to Dirk's diet, which was the opposite to Mark's. Mark's was sugar-free. Dirk's was low protein, low potassium, low everything, really. He was hardly allowed anything. So all these things were going on. And I just felt at this time, I felt my world was falling apart. I think I was in tears nearly every day. And I was totally overwhelmed. I was angry. And I found it really difficult to believe that God was loving. Going to church was difficult, singing hymns, because I didn't feel like praising God. I felt that God had done a dirty trick on us. Why should I be praising him? Neither of us could see the love of God at that time. It was just so difficult. And I think God was very gracious because people were so kind to us. Friends would send cards and little poems, little books. They'd send flowers. They'd do nice things for us. And eventually, both of us, we just said to one another, if people care this much, then God must care even more. And it was through people that God made us realize again that he did love us, because we just could not see God's love in that situation. Well, I have to say, when Dirk started the dialysis, it brought him back to life, because he was nearly dead. And it did give him a measure of life, and he was able to continue his work. And insulin brought life back to Mark. 50 years ago, 60 years ago, both of them would have been dead, but both of them were alive because of modern science. And we were very, very grateful. I could go on and on about the stories of dialysis. There were things to learn. We had to learn how to build this big sort of artificial kidney. And like I say, nowadays they're disposable. But then they had layers of plasticky stuff with little tubes in them. And you put layers of membrane in between them. And then it had to be sterilized. We had to do this 3 times a week. And after Dirk had dialyzed for 7 hours, he would then have to clean out all this apparatus and sterilize it. And then once a week, we had to throw it all out and rebuild it. So it was a very, very time-consuming process and very wearying process. And also a great responsibility, because we were in our home with all this equipment. And I tell you, I just was so scared. And especially if something went wrong. For example, occasionally an impurity would get into the system because blood was going out of Dirk's body, going through a machine and then coming back in again. There's always a chance of impurities. And if an impurity got into the system, he would have what's called a rigor, where his body would start shaking. And then I would have to put up a saline drip and can get him. I'm sorry if I'm making anybody feel ill. Do stay. And then we'd have to, I'd have to, detach him from the machine and then wait until he'd got over it and then start all over again. And this happened not often, but it did happen occasionally. So it was just a very, very stressful process to go through 3 times a week. And we were praying regularly that God would send a transplant for Dirk. And 4 years later, he did send a transplant. It was the week before we moved house. Sometimes wonder at God's timing. We'd been praying for this kidney for 4 years. And we'd actually decided that we were in a rented house in Sheffield. And just for security, we needed to have our own house. And God had provided the means for us to be able to buy our own house. And we decided we'd move to Manchester because that was going to be a good place for Dirk's work. It was near my parents, and it just seemed a good place to come to. But the week before we were due to move, the kidney came, and Dirk was in hospital, and I moved with some very good friends who helped me through this move. And he came back to a nice clean house because it had all been newly decorated, and with a new kidney to a sparkling clean house. So, and that was wonderful. The year following this was an extremely difficult year for me. You would think that Dirk had got his kidney now and he was much, much better. He didn't need dialysis. But I think the 4 years of stress took its toll on me. And when it all stopped, I became very, very depressed. And the move to Manchester was a difficult move for me. I saw everything black. I walked down the streets and I saw paper and rubbish on the streets and I hated it. I didn't like the school that the children went to. I didn't like the house we lived in. I just couldn't be positive about anything. And Dirk was feeling so much better. And instead of being a help to him, I was a hindrance and a drain. And it was probably one of the most difficult years in our marriage. And it was God eventually got through to me. I think really I could have done with some treatment, but I didn't know I was depressed and I didn't know I was stressed. I just thought I was having a hard time. But God did eventually speak to me through a passage in Ephesians 5, the verses on women being submissive to husbands. Now, it was a study I was doing with some other people. I didn't particularly want to do it, but it was just the passage I happened to be reading. And the way I was feeling at this time was, I felt as if I was a long way from Dirk's love. And I think he felt the same about me. I think he felt distanced from my love. And we just weren't connecting. And as I was reading this passage, it was just as if God said to me, Sandra, when you don't submit to me, you cut yourself off from my love. If you dig your heels in with my will, it's not that I don't love you, but you cut yourself off from my love. And it was just like the Lord saying to me, that's just what you're doing with your husband. You're digging your heels in all the time. And you won't submit to the fact that you're here in Manchester and this is your home now. And you're fighting it all the time. Give in and stop fighting. And it didn't suddenly change overnight. But from that day on, I started to change. And my attitude started to change. And I think God started to build me up and help me to feel happy about being in Manchester. And our relationship started to heal gradually, not overnight by any means. It had come a long way and it needed time to rebuild up again. Well, this kidney lasted Dirk for 9 years, although it wasn't working very well. A third of the kidney was working because initially his body had started rejecting the kidney. And through drugs, the doctors had been able to stop the rejection going any further. But he only had 1/3 of a kidney working, which meant that he wasn't well, he wasn't strong, he was anemic. And although he didn't need dialysis, he wasn't 100%. But it did mean he could work, and we were working still with the navigators in Manchester. But then, as time went by, our children were 18. Mandy was 18, Mark was 16, and Mark was 13. And at that point, this first kidney actually failed again, and so Dirk had to go back onto dialysis. And just lost my page here. Yeah, he went back onto dialysis, and in some ways it was a little easier because of the modern equipment, and it wasn't the shock that it was the first time, because we'd been through it before. But it was still it was a very stressful time, probably the most difficult time for Dirk, because the first time he was younger, and his body was able to cope with it better. The second time he was older, and his body wasn't able to cope with it as well. And for the first 6 months of that dialysis, he was actually losing blood. And it wasn't until 6 months that it was discovered that he had a malignant polyp in his bowel that was causing the bleeding. And so he had this removed. I think Dirk was too ill at the time to even realise that he'd had cancer. He was just surviving. And having an operation and being on dialysis at the same time is very rough. But he got through it and he recovered. And the operation was successful. They removed every bit of the cancer. And it hasn't returned since. So we're very thankful to the Lord for doing that. But however, even though the bleeding was stopped, Dirk had a problem with severe anemia. And we heard about a new drug that had just come out called EPO, erythropoietin. They called it EPO. But it was very, very expensive, and they weren't giving it to all kidney patients because it was so expensive. But Dirk was chosen as one of the few to try this drug. And it made a big difference, didn't it, Dirk? It brought your hemoglobin up, and it gave him more strength. And so, again, we were thankful to the Lord for giving him this drug. But as time went by, for some reason, although he was on EPO, his hemoglobin started going down again, and he became very, very weak. And I think, when I look back to that time, just thinking how I felt, my feelings were different the first time. I have a picture of myself in water with my head just managing to stay above the water, and that's how I felt. I was just managing to survive. And a couple of verses that were very helpful to me at that time were the one that says, "A broken reed he will not break." I felt like a broken reed. I was bent and I was very weak. But it was an encouragement to me that God doesn't break the weak. He helps the weak. And then the other verse that helped me was, "Underneath are the everlasting arms." Because I felt I was falling. But however low I would fall, I could never fall low enough for the arms not to be there. And so those verses were very, very helpful to me. And then in 1992... we went over to Holland for Dirk's parents' golden wedding. And during that time, I spoke to Dirk's sister, Wilma, who she was 40 at the time. And she came up to me and she said, I've come to the decision that now is the time when I could give a kidney to Dirk. I've had my children. I'm 40, I won't be wanting any more children. Now is the time when I could do it. And she explained to me that she's, and you have to understand Wilma, she's from Holland, and many Christians in Holland find it difficult to talk about the faith in the way that we would. They're very reserved and not at all charismatic, but very solid in their faith. And Wilma's one of these people. And for her to say this was amazing, because she said to me, she said, "It's just as if I heard the voice of God saying to me, this is what I should do, and this is what I want to do." And she wanted me to try and have all the tests done without Dirk knowing, so that she wouldn't get him excited about having a transplant, just in case it didn't work, it wasn't a good match. So we tried very hard to get the blood over without Dirk knowing anything about it. And the doctors weren't very helpful, actually, at the hospital. They were saying, "Oh, you know, well, it doesn't always work and it might not be a good match." And in the end, we had to involve Dirk. And I knew what his reaction was going to be. He said, "I'm not having a kidney from any of my family. If God's shown Wilma, he's going to have to show me too." And so the next day, Dirk was reading in Esther, and it just happened to be his reading program. And it was like God said to him, he could have chosen another way, but at that time he chose Esther to do the work he had to do. And it was as if God said to Dirk, "I could do it another way, but I'm choosing to use your sister." And so Dirk felt that God had given him the go-ahead to at least say, "Let's have the blood tested." And so the blood was flown over. It was very exciting. We had to go to the airport at 6 o'clock in the morning, collect the blood, take it to Manchester Royal and have all these tests done. And when they tested it, every single factor matched. And they said it was as good as an identical twin, because every factor matched. And then the next thing was Wilma had to come over for a whole week of tests and to go in hospital for some of the tests, because they have to take very careful note of her kidney, and the veins and arteries going into the kidney all have to be right, otherwise it doesn't work. So Wilma had to leave her children. She has four children. The youngest was about 7 at the time. And her husband was a tremendous support. She came over in August to have all these tests done, and again every single test was good and acceptable. And so then they said, "Well, let's make a date for this operation." And so September the 11th was the date set. And I think many of you know that you prayed for us during that time, which we really appreciate, and everything worked out. And Dirk is here today, fit and well, because of that kidney from his sister. It seemed when we were praying all those years ago that God wasn't answering our prayers, because it seemed to last such a long time. But God's answered so many prayers and given us a life back to enjoy now that we would never have believed. I just wanted to say that all these things have had an effect on our children. It's been hard for them, the three of them. We have three children, Mandy, Mark and Stephen. Mandy had just started university this second time when Dirk was ill, and it was really hard for her being away from home. And she after Dirk's transplant, actually, she needed some counselling, because she was emotionally very upset and felt that she hadn't shown her father enough love, because she found it so painful, she distanced herself from him. But in fact, it was because of her love that she did this. And she's really well now, and she's got through that. Stephen is still working his way through his own faith. I think they found it hard as well to believe how a loving God could let these things happen to their father. And Mark, he believes it all up here. But he wants to live his life the way he wants to live it himself at the moment. So he's got a long way to go. But that's our story so far. We've all got a story. But this is the backdrop for the weekend. And the things that we'll be sharing have come out of our times of darkness and light that we've been through. And so I hope as we're speaking you'll be able to identify. We all go through different things, some more traumatic, some less traumatic. But whatever the problem, we have ways of communicating. We identify. And perhaps the feelings that I had, you can identify with something that might seem much smaller. But you can still feel angry. You can still feel disappointed. You can still feel the same things. So maybe we can connect in the things that we've learned and are still